Welcome to the deep dive. Look, every day, Hacker News is just packed with stuff, right? It's where the tech world hangs out.
Absolutely. It's a fire hose of information.
So what we do here is sift through all that, pull out the really interesting bits, the things you actually need to know, and we'll break it down for you.
Give you that shortcut to being in the loop.
Exactly. Today is Tuesday, April 29th, 2025, and we've got five big topics that were lighting up the HN front page.
Yeah, a really interesting mix today. We're going from language learning to paid search, browser updates, even AI playing games and, well, arguing with itself.
Okay, let's list them out. First, there's Liberlingo. It's pitched as a free open source alternative to Duolingo.
Then we'll get into Kagi, the paid search engine. Lots of different opinions there.
Oh, yeah. And Firefox finally got native tab groups. People seem pretty happy about that.
Then there's this AI, O3, beating a top GeoGuessr player. Raises some interesting points.
Definitely. And lastly, this technique called chain of recursive thoughts, basically making AI think harder by, like, debating itself.
Quite the spread, like you said, really shows what Hacker News is all about.
Totally. It's a real snapshot of current tech thinking, the innovations, the headaches, all of it.
So where should we start? Liberlingo?
Yeah, let's jump into Liberlingo. So free, open source, community-driven language learning. The origin story, according to the HN thread, is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. What was it?
The creator wanted a better way to learn Sanskrit, apparently. They found reading stories and, you know, spotting patterns in context worked way better.
Ah, like seeing the same sentence structure over and over, like that Sarvajan verb example they gave.
Exactly. It's that pattern recognition thing. Learning by seeing it used.
Makes a lot of sense. That whole comprehensible input idea, right? But the creator also admitted that just reading stories has its limits.
Right. You don't necessarily get exposed to all the different verb tenses or, you know, the grammatical moods and all that complexity just from stories alone.
Yeah. The narrative dictates what you learn, basically.
Interestingly, they mentioned getting really positive feedback from programmers on Hacker News.
Which sort of makes sense, maybe. Programmers like open source, they like patterns.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But they struggled more, apparently, reaching traditional language learners.
Hmm. Maybe those learners prefer more established platforms, something more structured, perhaps. Or just haven't heard of it yet. Marketing's hard.
True. Now, language support, they're aiming wide. Covering all of DeepL's languages, plus some extras using Claude and Grok.
Right, and the word was Grok is faster, but the Claude-only languages are maybe a little less smooth.
Yeah, that's what the discussion suggested. It shows that they're really pushing what these AI models can do, but also hitting some trade-offs.
Balancing speed, quality, and coverage across tons of languages. That's a big technical lift.
For sure. And the Hacker News thread really blew up into a wider chat about how people learn languages. That comprehensible input thing came up a lot.
Right. The idea of just immersing yourself in stuff you can mostly understand, like kids' shows, simple books, that kind of thing. Let it soak in.
So if you're listening and thinking about language learning, maybe that's an approach.
Yeah.
Instead of hitting the grammar books right away.
It's definitely one school of thought. Another point raised was focusing on vocabulary first. Build up your word bank before worrying too much about speaking or complex sentences.
Get the building blocks in place.
Exactly. Though, you know, people debate the best order for this stuff endlessly.
Oh, yeah. Like the whole debate about translation-heavy apps. Do they help you get started with basic words? Or do they actually stop you from, you know, thinking in the new language?
That's a classic tension, isn't it? Is it a useful crutch or a long-term hindrance? Probably depends on the person and how they use it.
And then the effectiveness of just learning through lots of examples versus, like, actively memorizing grammar rules.
Repetition versus rules. I think for a lot of people, seeing examples feels more natural, less like homework. And engagement is key, right? You gotta stick with it.
Totally. If it feels like a chore, you'll just drop it.
Speaking of dropping it, pronunciation came up too. The worry that speaking too early might lock in bad habits.
Oh, interesting. Like, you need to train your ear first before you start making the sounds yourself.
Something like that, yeah. Get the sounds right in your head first.
Of course. People also champion structured learning, you know, with a teacher. Getting feedback, corrections, writing essays. The whole traditional package.
Yeah, that direct interaction and correction is hard to beat for accelerating progress if you have access to it.
But the big takeaway from the whole HN discussion seemed to be whatever method you pick, it takes time. Lots of time and consistent practice. No magic bullets.
None at all. Consistency is everything.
And SRS-based repetition software got a lot of mentions. Anki, specifically.
Oh, yeah, Anki's huge for memorization. That free Japanese deck someone recommended sounded great.
It almost feels like a lot of language apps are basically just fancy interfaces for SRS, you know?
There's definitely a lot of that. SRS is powerful for drilling vocabulary and facts. It just works by showing you stuff right before you'd forget it. Super efficient.
Now, there was one slightly awkward point. The name Librelingo. Being so close to Duolingo.
Yes. Someone brought up potential trademark issues, past cases with open source projects.
And joked about the Duolingo owl coming after them. It's a real issue for FOSS projects, that branding and naming tightrope.
Definitely something to be careful about. You don't want legal trouble or just confusing people.
Okay, let's shift over to Kagi. Paid search. This one really split the Hacker News crowd.
Yeah, you had really passionate people on both sides. Those who love it and those who just don't see the point in paying for search.
Exactly. Some were saying, look, $10 or more a month, that's too much, especially if I just use Bang searches anyway to go straight to Reddit or Wikipedia or whatever.
Right. If your searches are very targeted, the value proposition of paid search might not be there for you compared to free options.
But then you had the other camp, people saying Kagi is essential, like the last subscription they'd cancel, even after YouTube Premium.
That's strong praise. It suggests Kagi is solving some real pain points for those users. Maybe better results, maybe privacy, maybe the customization features.
That customization seemed key. We'll get back to that. But this also fit into the whole subscription fatigue discussion.
Oh, yeah. Everyone feels that, right? All these little monthly charges adding up. People were talking about needing to track them, review them.
It became a whole personal finance tangent almost.
It's just the reality of online services now. You got to manage those recurring costs.
Someone used a sandwich cost analogy for Kagi's $10. Is it worth a sandwich a month? Which predictably led to a debate about how much sandwiches actually cost now.
Yeah, that's a fun way to frame it, but value is subjective, and so is the price of lunch, apparently.
Now, there was a specific incident mentioned, people getting auto-renewed after a trial unexpectedly.
Right. Kagi said it might have been a bug with a partner, offered refunds, but you had to ask for them.
And that split people, too. Some saw it as an honest mistake. Others felt it was a bit dodgy, making people opt in for the refund.
Yeah, how companies handle mistakes like that really impacts trust. Transparency is key. The opt-in refund definitely rubs some people the wrong way.
The whole paying for stuff discussion even touched on piracy briefly. Arguments about affordability or wanting to avoid U.S. services. Complex stuff.
Yeah, the reasons people turn to piracy are varied. Economics, access, politics. It's not simple.
Okay, but what does Kagi actually do that people like? The base search quality was often cited as being pretty good, like comparable to Google.
Which isn't too surprising, since Kagi uses Google and other indexes as sources. But the value comes from what Kagi does on top of that.
Like the customization. Being able to blacklist or whitelist domains, boost sites you trust, downrank SEO spam. People seem to love that.
That's a huge draw, taking control back from the algorithm and the SEO spammers. If you search for coding help, you know which sites are usually useless. Kagi lets you just push them down.
Sounds powerful. And using keyword searches within the browser for specific sites like BobR for Reddit or whatever, power user stuff.
Yeah, little workflow optimizers like that add up.
And the AI features. Summarizing results, answering questions, even letting you pick different LLMs. That feels pretty cutting edge for a search engine.
Definitely. Integrating AI assists directly into search is a big trend. And offering model choice is a nice touch. Gives you flexibility.
It wasn't all perfect, though. Some users had trouble getting results only in their specific language.
Yeah, that granular language filtering is important for a lot of people. Hopefully something they can refine.
But the core argument for many seemed to be. Google search is getting worse. Cluttered with ads and SEO junk, so Kagi feels cleaner and more useful, even if you need to tweak it a bit yourself.
That perception of declining Google quality is definitely driving interest in alternatives like Kagi. People are willing to pay and put in some effort for a better experience.
Now, there is a more serious concern raised about Kagi funding Yandex and their stance regarding Ukraine, drawing parallels to Kaspersky. That ethical dimension is there too.
Yeah, the source of funding and the ethical stances of underlying providers are definitely things some users consider carefully. It adds another layer to the decision.
On the plus side, long-term users pointed to Kagi's detailed changelog and responsiveness on Hacker News as proof they're listening and improving.
That kind of transparency and engagement builds loyalty. Seeing active development is reassuring when you're paying for a service.
And again, worth remembering, Kagi uses Google results, among others. It's a layer on top. not a totally separate index.
Precisely. It's about curation, features, and user experience.
Okay, topic shift. Firefox, tab groups, they're finally native.
Yes. Big news in the Firefox world. Lots of positive chatter on HN about this.
People who use extensions for this seem particularly happy. Native usually means smoother, right?
Generally, yeah. Better integration, potentially better performance than add-ons trying to achieve the same thing.
And this led to talk about vertical tabs, too. Someone asked how the native Firefox version compares to the Sideberry extension, which apparently does even more fancy stuff.
Like per-container proxies and things. Yeah, that highlights the usual trade-off. Built-in convenience versus the power and features of dedicated extensions for heavy users.
This whole tab management thing, it really taps into how people actually use browsers, doesn't it? Keeping tons of tabs open.
Oh, absolutely. That idea of soft bookmarking. You find something interesting, or it's related to a task like shopping for a steam generator, as the example went.
Ah, yeah. You leave the tab open as a reminder, because just putting it in bookmarks or history doesn't feel the same.
Exactly. History gets cluttered. Open tabs feel more like an active to-do list or reading pile.
Someone mentioned Safari on iOS limits you to 500 tabs per group. Gives you an idea of the scale some people operate at.
Wow. Yeah, clearly there's a need for managing that many tabs effectively.
One funny comment was from someone who just stumbled upon the feature accidentally while multitasking like crazy. A happy accident.
Sometimes the best discoveries happen that way.
But like any new feature, there are some wrinkles mentioned. Importing existing profiles into these groups wasn't straightforward, apparently.
Yeah, migration paths for existing setups are often tricky in early versions.
And opening links from other apps into specific tab groups or profiles using friendly names wasn't quite there yet either. Room for polish.
Fair points. Those kinds of integrations make a feature much more seamless in day-to-day use.
And inevitably, someone made a cynical crack about telemetry, suggesting it's just used to justify decisions already made.
The perennial skepticism about data collection and software. Always a popular topic on HN.
All right, let's dive into the AI section. This O3 model beating a master GeoGuessr player, even without Ige's IF beta in the photos.
Yeah, this was fascinating. It really shows how good AI vision models are getting at understanding place from images alone.
But there was controversy right off the bat because the AI used Google search in some rounds.
Right. The author admitted it wasn't strictly in the spirit of human GeoGuessr, but wanted to show the model's ability to combine vision and web info.
Acknowledged it was maybe technically cheating against a human.
Which does muddy the waters if you're trying for a pure human versus AI skill comparison.
However, the author pushed back a bit, saying the search only made a real difference in one round, and crucially, O3 won a round fair and square in Colombia. No search used.
That's a strong point. And they reran the whole thing without search and apparently got very similar results overall.
So the core visual location ability seems pretty solid, search or no search.
Seems like it. But it still kicked off that whole HN debate. What is cheating for an AI is using external data the same as a human Googling.
It gets philosophical fast, doesn't it? Rules versus spirit of the game.
And it touches on AI alignment too, right? The AI did what it was allowed to do by the rules provided.
But maybe not what the human intended for a fair comparison. Aligning AI with intent, not just literal rules, is hard.
Exactly. Someone compared it to aimbots in FPS games or insane micromanagement bots in StarCraft. AI can win in ways that aren't really about human-like skill in the game itself.
Yeah, it's performing a task super efficiently, but is it playing the game as we understand it?
Another angle was, maybe it's not about reasoning like a human, but more about adaptability to novelty. How well does it handle totally unseen places?
That's an interesting way to frame it. Less about mimicking humans, more about general competence in new situations.
And of course, the moving goalposts argument came up. As soon as AI does something impressive, some people say, okay, but that's not real intelligence.
Happens every time, doesn't it?
Pretty much. Still, even with the search debate, the descriptions of the AI's thought process, how it analyzed clues in the images, sounded really impressive.
Yeah, the chain of thought, identifying architectural styles, vegetation, road markings. Wow. That's sophisticated visual analysis.
People on HN apparently tried it with their own photos. Got mixed results better on public landmarks, less so on private scenes, which makes sense.
And that naturally led to privacy concerns. If AI can pinpoint locations so well, does that make things like doxing easier?
It's a valid worry. Expert-level doxing for the masses was a phrase used, I think. As the tech gets better and easier to use, the potential for misuse grows.
Though counterarguments were made, too. Like, a determined person could probably do this already with existing tools.
True. And maybe this just raises awareness, makes people more careful about the photos they share online. Could be a silver lining.
The skill level of the human master player was also questioned. With some pointing out, even better players exist, and other AIs like Gemini have apparently done even better in benchmarks.
Right. It's a constantly evolving field, both for humans and AI. Keeping track of the absolute best is tricky.
Still kind of funny that GeoGuessr became this big benchmark and pastime for tech folks, exploring the world from your keyboard.
It has that appeal, doesn't it? Geography, puzzle solving, low stakes exploration.
Okay, last big topic. Chain of recursive thoughts. Making AI argue with itself to think better.
This sounds really clever. Instead of just giving one answer, you prompt the AI to play different roles, debate internally, critique its own ideas.
And users on HN who'd tried similar things said, it actually works pretty well. Forces the AI to consider alternatives, challenge its first instinct.
Yeah, getting it to step outside its initial generated path, like simulating a brainstorming session almost.
Someone connected it to inference time scaling, where the model internally explores multiple thought paths and picks the best one. Seems related.
Conceptually similar, yeah. Exploring multiple possibilities. Recursive thoughts seems more about explicitly prompting that exploration and critique, though.
But here's the big counterpoint.
Yeah.
Are LLMs actually any good at judging their own work?
Ah, the self-verification problem.
Exactly. Research was cited, I think, by Subrah Kampati's group, showing GPT-4 confidently making mistakes in logic proofs until an external tool checked it.
And having GPT-4 critique itself actually made things worse in that case.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
But adding the external reliable checker boosted accuracy significantly.
That's a huge finding.
Mm-hmm.
Suggests LLMs are great generators, but maybe terrible self-validators, at least for complex logical tasks.
Which leads to this LLM modulo idea. Treat the LLM as an idea engine, but always pair it with a sound external verifier for anything critical. Don't rely on it to check its own homework accurately.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Use it for what it's good at, generation and brainstorming, but have something else handle the rigorous checking.
And some practical experience from the thread backed this up. People found that a single strong model plus a good verifier often worked as well as, or better than, complex setups where multiple AIs debated each other, and it was simpler.
Interesting. Sometimes simpler is better, especially if the complex method involves unreliable self-critique.
Still, even knowing these limits, people shared cool prompting tricks to encourage more critical thinking. Like telling the AI, okay, now critique your previous answer, or find three flaws in your proposal.
Right, trying to force it into a more self-aware mode, even if it's not perfectly reliable, like teaching it to play devil's advocate against itself.
Using large context windows, like in Gemini, helps here too. You can have a longer back and forth within one prompt, asking follow-up questions, challenging assumptions.
Yeah, more space for that iterative refinement and critique within the same conversation.
People got really creative, creating multiple AI personalities in the prompt to interact, even telling one to be mean or super skeptical.
Huh. Adversarial prompting, trying to get stronger counter arguments out of it.
Then there are more structured systems, like using an arbiter model to judge outputs from several other models and decide what's best or ask for revisions.
That sounds more robust. A dedicated judge role.
People talked about prompts based on legal systems, AI attorneys arguing, an AI judge ruling, or a council of different personas, scientist, historian, artist, analyzing something together.
Wow, really elaborate prompt engineering shows how much effort people are putting into guiding these models.
Though one person noted that even when they told two AI assistants to argue, they often just ended up agreeing eventually.
Huh. Maybe they're just too polite. Or their training data leans so heavily towards consensus. Fascinating.
And totally unrelated, there was a little side discussion about using hashtag to shorten words like K8s for Kubernetes and how confusing that can be if you're not in the know.
Oh yeah, tech jargon abbreviations. Efficient but can be opaque. Clarity matters.
Whew. Okay, that was quite the tour through today's Hacker News front page for Tuesday, April 29th, 2025.
Absolutely. From open source language learning with Librelingo, the whole paid versus free search debate around Coggy.
The welcome arrival of Firefox Tab Groups, that impressive, if debated, GeoGuessr performance by the O3 AI.
And finally, these really inventive techniques like chain of recursive thoughts trying to push AI reasoning further. It's a lot.
Definitely shows the sheer range of what gets discussed in the tech world. Innovation, yes. Challenges, practical tools, future gazing.
And that's what this deep dive is for, to give you that condensed version, the key takeaways, so you're up to speed.
So here's a final thought to leave you with, building on all this. We're seeing AI get incredibly good at processing information, locating things visually, even simulating debate with itself.
Yeah, the pace is kind of stunning.
So thinking about all that, what new possibilities, but also maybe what new challenges or concerns do you see coming just around the corner in how we learn, how we find information, how we interact with tech every day?
Definitely something to chew on. The landscape is changing fast.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We hope it gave you some things to think about and maybe sparked some curiosity to explore these topics further yourself.